Welcome back to Journalistic Integrity. It is Sunday, April 3rd, and I did not want to wait any longer to talk about this Final Four, so I'm doing it right now on Sunday, and just an amazing Final Four. The most anticipated college basketball game of my lifetime, UNC Duke. And, you know, college basketball is just amazing. You've got a UNC team that was an 8 seed, and let me read you a few of their losses throughout the season because, you know, their journey to the championship game, a lot of ups and downs, a lot of downs, really. And it started in November. They lose to Tennessee by 17 points. They lose to Kentucky by 30 in December, and now we're in January. They lose to Wake Forest by 20 points, a Wake team that didn't make the tournament. Then they're at home against Duke in their first matchup, and they lose by 20. This is in February, so we're just a month before the tournament starts, and they're still losing by a lot of points to some of these ACC teams. Then they lose later on in February to Pittsburgh, who, and they're down 20-plus points in this game. And let me tell you, Pittsburgh was one of the worst teams in the Power Six conferences or whatever it is in basketball. They were just awful. They lose to Pitt in mid-February. Then they lose to Virginia Tech by 13, only score 59 points in the ACC tournament. And they're going up against Coach K, who 31% of the time he makes the Final Four. It's an incredible, incredible stat. And really looking at Coach K, it kind of there's kind of two different segments, eras of Coach K. And it kind of shows how Coach K's either his coaching or recruiting or a little bit of both have kind of fallen off. And so I divided it into two. We've got 1986 to 2004, so a span of 18 years. He made 10 Final Fours. So on average, that's more than every other year making a Final Four. Absolutely incredible. But then we go to 2005 to 2022 this year, 17 years. He only made 3 Final Fours. And so that's closer to a clip of every 6 years making a Final Four. So it really fell off for Coach K. And some of the coaching was not as good. And we'll get to one of those parts later on when I talk about the game in depth. But the numbers show Duke and Coach K just were not as dominant the past 15 years as they were in the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. Maybe that's in part because of the one and done, and Coach K doesn't have those senior type Nolan Smith, Chris Duhon, Shire type players. But definitely had fallen off the past 15 years. Still, Duke was still dominant, but I mean, the 80s and 90s, looking at it, they were getting to just Final Fours in 3 straight years is really unheard of. So let me start quickly with Nova and Kansas. And here's a crazy stat for that game. Kansas, in this game against Villanova, very good defense, scored 1.4 points per possession. So every time they had the ball, they were walking down the other court on average with 1.4 points. That is the highest clip against Villanova in 5 years, 5 seasons. And it happened the Final Four with Kansas. And even further, Kansas didn't have any fast break points. So it's not like Kansas was getting out and running and getting a lot of easy buckets. They were in their half court, and you know, Kansas just made a ton of threes. Abachi came out, made 4 straight threes. But Villanova, I mean, they settled down, and you look at Villanova, they shoot a lot of threes and they defend. That's their main thing. They went 13 of 31 from three, which is 42%. Usually if you shoot over 30 threes and you make over 42% of them, you're going to win those games, I don't know, like 90% of the time. But on the other hand, Kansas went 13 of 24 from three, 54%. Villanova never led. McCormick, 25 points on 12 shots. And, you know, we said this last podcast, Villanova doesn't have a big man. They have Dixon, who's like 6'7", 6'8", but McCormick is just such a big body. He was getting so deep in the paint before he even touched the ball. He was getting it like 2 feet around. It was a step and then either hook shot. He was making it with his left. McCormick, really good. It's a shame because if it was like 15, 20 years ago, McCormick's going in the lottery with those post moves and that size. But unfortunately for him, you basically have to be able to shoot the ball at a respectable clip to play in the NBA. But props to Villanova and Jay Wright. That team is tough. Like they got down 19 points, but they still were never hanging their heads. They are still competing really hard, like getting after loose balls. Gillespie, Slater's hitting some big threes, and they cut it to 58-64 with 6:10 left. So a 6-point game, and they were like one shot away from really making Bill Self start sweating it out. You could kind of see they're doing some ISOs on Bill Self. You could kind of see like his face was a little extra red. It looked like his collar was getting a little tight. He was like sticking a finger trying to bring out his collar to free up some airways. Very close to a Kansas collapse, but Kansas held on. Brown, the white dude, hit some big threes at the end, including one right at the end of the shot clock. I think that put up Kansas by 11 points, but a couple daggers late from him. Abaji, he was good. You know, he came out on fire. He was 6 of 7 from three for 21 points. He started off 4 for 4, but then there's a segment of like 20 minutes of game time where he completely disappeared. And it was just classic, you know, the one missing piece is he'll disappear sometimes. And he's not assertive. Charles Barkley was really hitting on this point in the pregame, during halftime, postgame. And he disappeared for a little while, and that's when Villanova made their run, hit a lot of big shots. But ultimately, when you dig that big of a hole against a Kansas team that defends, you're not going to get a ton of like quick, easy layups, and a Kansas team that gets decent looks just about every time they go down the court, it's really tough to come back from, you know, a 19-point deficit against them. But Villanova, you don't know. Who knows? Justin Moore, if he's there, if it makes a difference, have another bigger body down there that can maybe give McCormick another body to worry about, or put him on a Abaji. Maybe he doesn't hit those threes early, but at the end of the day, Kansas takes care of business. Okay, let's shift to the biggest game of the night, and that was obviously UNC Duke, their 259th meeting taking place in the Final Four. Coach K trying to avenge his loss in his final game in Cameron Indoor Stadium to UNC. And look, coming into this, and I said this last podcast, I liked Duke more. I thought with the shot making in the dome, UNC just relies so heavily on threes with Caleb Love and Manic. And so I thought Duke getting the ball in the paint, some easier buckets on average, then UNC would propel them for the win. And that looked right for the first half. We've got Caleb Love, and all the UNC fans that I've talked to say, look at the first few shots Caleb Love shoots. If he's missing them, he's probably going to be off. If he's making them, you know, he's a really streaky shooter. So he misses those first three threes really early on, and I'm like, okay, this could be a classic Caleb Love 4-for-16, 4-for-17, 5-for-18 type game, but I was wrong on that. But where the game started, Mark Williams picks up his second foul 5 minutes into the game. And so he sits the rest of the first half. And this was a huge problem. He only played 17 minutes in the game. And he was dominant when he was in the game. If he got the ball in the paint, there's a lot of roach, keels, drives, shove it off to Mark Williams, and he does a great job finishing. He goes up with two hands and dunks it every time. Really tough to block with that big of a guy. But he gets two fouls, and you sit him out the whole time. He only plays 17 minutes. And I'm saying, look, if you sit a guy the whole time because he's in foul trouble, at what point does that become worse than the player actually fouling out? Okay, and so the difference is, hey, we'd rather have this valuable guy at the end of the game, so we don't want him to foul out. Those minutes are more valuable. But, you know, maybe you save a couple minutes there if he fouls out, but then you've got a whole section of 20 minutes where he's not playing just because he's in foul trouble. And I thought Coach K, you know, in his press conference said, we weren't able to play Mark Williams. It's like, yeah, you were able to play him. You know, you just decided not to, because sometimes coaches, especially old school coaches, they get so scared. And I feel like if there's like a Sean McVay type college basketball coach, he would just never bench a player because he's in foul trouble, or only if he has four fouls early. But at some point, you're hurting yourself if you keep a guy benched for so long because he's in foul trouble. And so he goes to the bench. For Duke, it was a lot of keels. And so Roach had a really bad game. And what Duke ended up looking at is saying, we've got Keels, a big guard. UNC's guards are smaller, especially RJ. So let's take advantage of that. And Keels was able to drive and get into the paint. Then Theo John comes in and says, hey, I see your two fouls, Mark Williams. I'm going to go ahead and get four fouls in the span of about 13 minutes in the first half. So they've got all their big men in foul trouble. And so into the half, UNC somehow hangs around. They only had 9 points from Manic and Baycott in the first half, but they're only down three at the end of the first half. And that's where we start with the first UNC run, beginning of the second half. And I remember this happening in the Cameron Indoor game, where UNC just like out of nowhere goes on this little flurry, and you're like, wait, we were just winning by like a few possessions, and all of a sudden the lead's evaporating. UNC has, you know, a couple possession lead, and that happened beginning of the second half. Caleb Love hits two threes. Manic hits a three. They get a layup, and Duke, who was up three at halftime, looks up, and it's 47-41 UNC out of nowhere. And then we go to what is arguably the play of the game, and that's at the 11-minute mark. Loose ball under Duke's basket. Banchero jumps, gets it. It looks like he has a brain fart in the air because he throws it straight to the chest of Baycott. And he gets a layup and one. Not only that, it's Mark Williams that fouled him, his fourth foul. He goes back to the bench because there's nothing Coach K likes more than putting someone on the bench who's in foul trouble. And that was a huge moment. They had the camera focused on Banchero throughout that play, and you could see him like hang his head immediately when that happened. It was a backbreaker for Duke, who could have, you know, regained the lead after that initial spurt by UNC. And then we go a little further ahead. UNC is up 62-57, but then we get an answer from Duke. And this is what was so great about this game, is it wasn't just, you know, one run by one team and then, you know, a late comeback by another team. It was these multiple spurts where it's going back and forth until the last minute of the game. And so UNC's up 5, 62-57. We get a Banchero layup. We get Roach fouled. He gets two free throws. And then they get a steal where Roach steals it. Then he misses the layup, but Keels follows it up with the layup. And so 62-57 UNC lead turns into a 63-62 Duke lead in the matter of a minute. Fast forward to 5:18 left in the game. Tied at 65, Baycott rolls his ankle. And his ankle like touches the ground. You never want that to happen when you roll your ankle. And he can barely walk. And it just looked, you know, he had to be helped off. He couldn't even kind of, you know, limp his way off, put a little weight on it. It looked like he was out. And it was going to be such a shame because of how great of a game. And everyone's like, dang, we're losing Baycott in this historic game. Baycott was just an animal down there, 20-plus rebounds. But he comes back. And there's so many like pauses and timeouts, reviews. He comes back with 4:36 left. So he only missed 42 seconds of game time. And the dude like ran up through the tunnel, and miraculously his ankle was healed. And so he's back on the court. So now we're under 4 minutes. Manic starts missing free throws for UNC. He goes 1-for-4 in a stretch of about a minute and a half from the line. And that was going to be the story if UNC lost, was Manic missed free throws down the stretch. But then he redeems himself. Manic comes back and drills a three to go up two. But then Wendell Moore Jr. comes back and he hits that three at the top of the key off the offensive rebound. And so now it's 74-73 Duke. And this was the point after they exchanged threes where you're looking around wherever you're watching the game. If you're at a bar, if you're at friends, locked in, watching it, you're like, oh, this is a classic game. These games that go back and forth, this type of shot making was insane. So it's 1-point lead for Duke with 1:18 left. Then we get a foul on RJ Davis. I didn't think it was a foul, and I'm glad there's not a Tuttle in like the refs lost us this game type stuff. Here's my view on the ref stuff. There's always going to be calls that are like 60-40, like, hey, I think 60% confident that it should not have been a foul. But guess what? That's not a huge deal. The bad foul calls or any ref call in any sport is when it's like a clear 90-10 split at the end of the game where it's, hey, it hit off this guy's hand. It should be our possession. And they call it the other way when it's clear and obvious. This was like, I didn't think it was a foul. RJ was driving left, kind of under control. I think they called body contact. I didn't think it was a foul, but I also don't think it was the biggest deal in the world. And so RJ knocks down his two free throws. 1-point lead for UNC. Go down to the other end. Duke gets it down to Mark Williams. He gets fouled by Baycott on the block. Baycott has fouled out, his fifth foul. So now if you're Duke, you're feeling kind of good. You've got, you know, this guy that's terrorized you on the boards. Now you've got the biggest body on the court. If this goes to overtime or if there's any offensive rebounds, you know, you really like your chances. Mark Williams, you saw him step to the line. All you needed was one glance, especially before the second free throw, but even before the first, you just needed one glance and you're like, oh, this guy does not want to be up there. And he misses both the free throws, completely backbreaking. But Duke was not out of this game yet. It's still 47 seconds left when he missed that those two free throws. So you're playing defense, hopefully get the ball back with about 20 seconds left, and you're still down one. So Duke's still very much in this game. So UNC has the ball on Duke's side. Biggest possession of the game. Leaky Black sets a screen top of the key for Caleb Love. And inexplicably, Mark Williams, who is on Leaky Black, his man is setting the screen. His first steps, he falls back. Okay? He shrinks back. He's worried about the drive. You're okay if it's a drive. You've got help defense on a drive. This is where the inexperience happened. This is where Coach K, I think, has lost his touch on the defense. I mean, Duke's defenses the past 5-10 years have been awful, which makes no sense when you have the best athletes on the court. And you'll see, like, in spurts, like, they'll have nice block shots. A.J. Griffin will block shots. But then he'll get beat on a backdoor cut. And so Mark Williams takes a step back. Caleb Love, just like he did in the Sweet 16, very similar situation. They're tied against UCLA in the Sweet 16. He hits the three. Now they're up one. Screen. Mark Williams, where a more experienced player, right, and Emile Jefferson or a Plumlee brother, guys that are, you know, juniors or seniors, they know, like, they're just more aware of these game situations. They know Caleb Love likes to shoot the three. You know, a three kills you. Four points kills you. If you're down three, not good, but you're okay. And he sinks back, and that was enough time for Caleb to step into it and hit that shot. Caleb Love, by the way, you know, his three, just unbelievable NCAA tournament. His three highest scoring games this year have all been in the NCAA tournament. And he just made huge shots, and he's not scared. The stuff that, like, makes you want to pull your hair out, if you're a UNC fan, is the same stuff that makes him great. He doesn't care if he's missed, 10 straight shots. He's going to take that shot every time. And that's been paying off in the NCAA tournament, that confidence. Drills a three. And talk, you know, Duke's got five NBA guys, right? So Keels, Moore, Banchero, Williams, and Moore, they're all projected to go in the first round. I think three in the lottery. And UNC doesn't, right? So Manek can't guard anybody. He's not strong enough. RJ Davis, too small. Baycott can't shoot. But Caleb Love, that three, you know, when you've got a seven-footer outstretched, even though he did sink back a little, that's an NBA shot. But more importantly, he had a couple plays where he's driving and he just goes straight into Mark Williams' body and then somehow finishes. And those are the type of shots that are, like, high-level NBA. Okay, you know, when I give those high marks when I'm doing my draft prep. I'm, you know, highlighting those type of plays out of him. If you can finish in the body of these big seven-footers, that's really big. But he didn't do it, you know, the whole season. So, you know, I think somebody's going to take a chance on Caleb Love after this season. And, you know, in the second round, sure, fine. But if you're reaching for him, you know, at the end of the first round, I think that's a stretch because, you know, you look at his whole body of work, 37% from the field is not great. But anyway, Love hits a few free throws down the stretch and ices it against Duke. UNC finishes 10 of 26 from three, 39% to Duke's 5 of 22, 23%. And UNC win. It was really just shocking. After the game, you know, I was convinced Duke was going to win this game. Just, you know, the points in the paint, I think, was 26-0 after the first half. We look at the turnovers. It was 10-4. Duke's advantage. The assists were 12-7 in Duke's favor. But there's something about this UNC team, and it's really hard to describe, but they just make shots when they need them. And they get offensive rebounds. They're getting all the 50-50 balls. Manek has, like, the quickest release ever. You know, you think you're on him. Wendell, that corner three he had over Wendell Moore was incredible. And UNC, what a story. 8 seed to the finals to play the Kansas Jayhawks, the Roy Williams Bowl, as I like to call it. And so quickly on that championship game, and I'll get out of here. I like Kansas because they defend. And you look at Duke, they weren't able to defend and stop UNC. But when you look at Kansas, and they've got Harris, DeJuan Harris Jr., their point guard, really long. And I think they're going to stick him on Caleb Love. And that's the matchup I'm going to be looking at. If you've got a guy that can contest those threes, got the foot speed, and his only weakness as a defender is he's not, you know, a strong body. But I don't think Caleb Love's going to be able to overpower him. And so, you know, I think Abaji is going to be on Manek, who's just a great defender. Wilson can also switch on to Manek as well. And, You know, I just like that, you know, in these type of games, I'm always going to side with the defense. What got Duke in trouble against UNC was a combination of lack of physicality, you know, on screens, securing defensive rebounds, getting these loose balls, and also really being like defensively in communication on these screens. Hey, if Caleb Love, someone's setting a screen for Caleb Love, you either have to hedge, you have to trap, you have to switch, you have to get on him because he's going to shoot that three. And when you start exchanging threes for twos, it starts to add up in the long run during a 40-minute game. And so I think Kansas is going to be much better defensively. There's not going to be as many offensive rebounds. McCormick gobbling those out. Also, the Kansas guards rebound really well. Harris and Wilson and Abaji, they all attack the glass and get out and run. It's going to be a fun game because both these teams like scoring, playing fast. Another interesting stat from the three, this kind of shows the disparity in styles between the two teams. Kansas, as a team, in their five games in the tournament, has attempted 91 three-pointers. Caleb Love and Manek have attempted 90 three-pointers in the same span. So they're shooting as many threes, those two players, as the whole Kansas team. But it's going to be an awesome game. McCormick and Baycott going at it down low. The good guards, you know, Baji on the wing, Manek on the wing. It's a great game. Excited for it. I just think, you know, the Kansas, the way they defend, and they just seem like a more complete team. They don't rely heavily on threes. If one thing's not working, you know, they can go to McCormick, they can go to Brown, Baji, or they can bring in Remy Martin if their offense really isn't working. And just watch Kansas out of timeouts. They always go for this Abaji alley-oop play where he comes from like the right corner and they try and throw it to him from the left wing, or they get McCormick on the block out of timeouts on inbound. So it's really impressive what they do. But props to UNC. Hubert Davis, cold-blooded twice, drives the stake into Coach K's heart. And, you know, we can look at the totality of Coach K's career, great career. But when you first bring up Coach K, like, this was so dramatic, so insane for him to lose to UNC in his last home game and then lose in the Final Four to UNC again. It's like such an insane, you know, string of events in a few weeks. Like, when you bring up Coach K, you know, great coach, one of the greatest coaches, five championships, all these Final Fours, but the ending is always going to be there, and that's just got to dig at Coach K. But let me give a final score. I'll go Kansas 79, UNC 74. So we'll see how that turns out. I went 1-1 in the Final Four games, but Kansas UNC doesn't get much better. Two big programs, ton of talent on both teams. So we'll see that. And I'll be back later, mid next week, over the championship game and some stuff moving forward. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and talk soon. See ya.